Hi, this is Cliff Sound on ComputerWeekly.com podcasts, where you can download and listen to interviews with leading experts on key topics of IT management and technology. In today's interview, I am speaking to Johan Kriebers, Group IT Architect at Royal Dutch Shell. Johan is speaking at Gartner's Enterprise Architecture Summit in London. In this interview, I will be talking to Johan about Shell's infrastructure outsourcing contract with EDS, AT&T and T-Systems, and the role of enterprise architects in managing that contract. Shell has a sort of mixed IT environment with people in-house and people working for your outsourcers. Can you explain to me how that had been put together?
Yeah, we call it inside Shell the One IT community, or the One IT ecosystem. And it was developed really by our CEO, Alan Matula, our group COO. And the whole purpose behind it, Shell is a growing business. And the business has a growing demand for IT service, and Shell IT itself cannot deliver that. We cannot grow fast enough. So what we try to do with One IT is use external partners in the first external partners in the way of outsourcing for standard infrastructure services. There we use AT&T for our telecoms part, we use EDS for our desktop environment, and we're using T-Systems for our hosting environment. So that together provide the shared services to Shell. Then we've got two key partners for software supply, that is SAP and Microsoft. And we've got four partners for application support, application development, where people can select from. So there's IBM, Wipro, Accenture, and Logica. Them together with Shell IT, and Shell IT focuses on the business IT, is the interface into the business, that together provides the IT services to the Shell business.
When you say that people can use IBM, Accenture, Logica, Wipro, what exactly does that mean? When will they be using these suppliers?
When the Shell business has a project, it has an IT component. For instance, it needs an SAP implementation, or it needs software development, or it needs to integrate the packets into the Shell environment. They will go to one of those four companies and say, hey, either IBM or Accenture or Wipro or Logica CMG or Logica, for them to do that extra work. I do this SAP implementation, the IT component, or do the integration of SAP into the Shell environment, or do the deployment of another business application. Then one of these four companies, the people of one of these four companies will do it. Shell will still be on Shell leadership, but those people execute the work. So any requirement from a business, what a business says, we have a project, either in retail or subsurface or in trading, which has an IT component, then business IT, so these people get involved, they need resources to do the work, and then one of those four companies will actually do the work of integrating the application, making the application live, and supporting on an ongoing basis that application.
Are they like preferred suppliers, or are these suppliers that you have already signed contracts with? And
they are preferred suppliers, but we have also signed contracts with them, so we have agreed tariffs and everything with those companies. So the business IT can go to one of those four companies, and they only need to agree the contents of the work to be done. They don't need to agree pricing, that kind of stuff.
Johan, can you tell me about the Shell architecture framework?
So we've been working in Shell on architecture for a number of years now, and so for the last 2 to 3 years when we started, my role in Shell has been the group IT architect. So we've done a number of different initiatives we've taken, and what we try to do with the Shell architecture framework to pull that together, so people understand from inside Shell, outside Shell, what we do from an architecture point of view. So it's pulling together how we manage the community, what tools we're using, what our standards are, what our roadmaps are. So creating one umbrella for that is what we call the Shell architecture framework. So in itself, it's not another framework, it's just pulling the whole story together so people understand, hey, how does everything fit together? So how does business architecture relate to information architecture, to technical architecture? How does it relate to solution architecture? That's really what we're trying to do with the Shell architecture framework, just an overall story people can relate, especially in Shell, say, okay, now we understand how solution architecture fits with the roadmap, how the story hangs together. That's what we're trying to do.
So is the Shell architecture framework something that is rolled out across the company? Is it a set of standards that everyone understands?
Shell architecture framework is Shell-wide. Yeah, so it is not just for one business, everybody. So the way we organize with Shell, maybe a step back, the way we organize is with architecture. So I'm part of the Shell Group I CEO office, and I have the lead architects in each of the businesses, so exploration, production, downstream, so Shell terms, Shell trading, global solutions, global functions, and ITS shared. So have all lead architects. That together is the architect lead our community in Shell. Yeah. So we have same. We use the same tools. Most of the standards are exactly the same. So we operate in exactly the same way, because in Shell our normal role is that if things can be done at the enterprise level, we do it at the enterprise level. So we don't have every business go in a different way. It's going one in the same way. So when we talk about all of these things, they happen in the whole of Shell, whether it's exploration production or trading in London or somebody in Singapore, whatever the person sits. It's done in a coherent fashion.
Now, who's responsible for defining the architecture?
So I'm accountable for that, because I'm the group IT architect for Shell. So I'm covering business architecture, information architect, technical architect. But I do that with my leadership team, which is really the lead architects of each of the businesses. So the lead architect of EMP, downstream, so the five or six businesses, together what we call in Shell the lead architecture team, headed by myself. But those are the people I have an accountability. And then they present it to business reps. We have what we call in Shell. So these are the people accountable for architecture in Shell, setting the standards and defining architecture. Out of that will come roadmaps. The roadmaps need to be approved by people in the business. So the business people need to say, we agree that we're going this way or that way. So we got representative of each of the businesses come together in a body called the ETAP, Enterprise Technology Architects Portfolio.
How many architects are there at Shell?
Well, unless first we need to be careful what we call architect. In Shell, we're pretty strict what we call architect. We call what we call an architect skill pool in Shell, where we define who can be part of it. What are the capabilities you need to have? You need to have technical capabilities, experience, but also personality capabilities. So it's a combination of things. An architect needs to have the right personality. He needs to have the technical background. He needs to be able to work at a high level, but also the low level. He needs to be level in, also in the breadth. So if I take all these things into account, we under 100 architects in Shell. And we also will have architects working from our One IT partners, on, let's say, as a solution architect, for instance, and they are not included in those numbers. People need to have quite extensive experience, can be operation experience, project management experience, portfolio management experience, before we say, yes, you can come into an architect type of role. And we expect also personality. An architect needs to have the nerve to speak out. I mean, if an architect doesn't speak out, then he's not really an architect. If an architect believes something should be done in a certain way, he should at least make his opinion clear. He might still lose at the end of the day for other reasons, but he has to need to have the nerve to speak out, to say, hey guys, this is the way we should be doing things.
So they must have quite an extensive training program.
They have, and they must have, and that they get over years. So they need to have technical experience, but also personality experience. And personality could be presentation skills, being able to make slides, or how to present stuff, or how to defend stuff, or interpersonal skill type. So you have that kind of training, interpersonal skill, presentation type of stuff, and you could purely the technology training, like if you want to be in a database architect, about database, about data modeling. So there's the technical side, but also about project management. You need to know what it means to run a project.
Just to stop you there, Johan, do these people come in from a technical background or more managerial background in terms of their IT skills?
Not so much managerial, but they will have done managerial jobs in over time, but they might have an application background, a data background, or a technical background. And then over time they've learned portfolio management, or they've learned something about project management, so they learn different things over time. Not really managerial, because they really need to have some specific skills in certain areas. They need to know, an architect need to be able to at least speak about in detail about data or application architecture. And so he or she needs to have background in that space, both at the high level and the detail level. And ideally also has awareness for technical architecture, so they can see the overall picture. So that's why people need to grow in a number of areas over time. So let's say if you're 25, you won't be an architect, because you're just missing the experience to actually done it. Yeah. So you need to be several years. And you can do that. Doesn't mean they need to be in Shell. It can be done in any other company. Yeah? So it doesn't mean that it all needs to go in the Shell environment. And of course, in an outsourcing picture, more or less you're dependent on other companies to grow the first number of years, because if you have no operational environment anymore, then people don't learn operations anymore in Shell, but might have to learn the AD&T or another company before they get into Shell and learn, let's say, some other skills in the Shell environment. In the past, architect often, because Shell had operations, did application support, did everything, So it was easy to grow, relatively easy to grow architects in the shell environment. Since we've outsourced most of that, it becomes more and more difficult.
How have you overcome those difficulties?
Well, a different way, external recruitment of architects, working with those one IT partners that architects can work a number of years in some of these companies. That's only starting to happen now, that's fairly new still. So they're getting experience in operations or in database support, for instance, or in application architecture before coming back into Shell. That is still all being developed. But so at the moment, most of our architects we have today have grown in the Shell system from many different roles in Shell. From,
of course, so yeah. they understand the Shell business.
Now the new architects we recruit from an external market, so we're recruiting actively on an external market for architects. So we go out in the market and finding and people. So people have a certain background and they already might have done, let's say, data architects in another company. So we will, if suitable, we take into Shell, grow them further because of our scale and our global reach. The scale of complexity is higher than maybe in many other companies.
Thank you, Johan, and thank you for listening. Please join me again on www.computerweekly.com/podcasts.